With abortion rights on the verge of collapse, some conservatives have acknowledged that pregnant people will need more support. That was the message last year when Texas passed a law banning abortions after about 6 weeks, even in the case of rape or incest. When we spoke to Rebecca Parma with the Texas Right to Life, she said her group would help those women during pregnancy.
And that's why we also advocate on behalf of, social service programs, like the Alternatives to Abortion program, to make sure that women have the counseling they need, the social services they need if they find themselves in these kinds of situations.
Those services include adoption. When Justice Alito wrote the leaked draft of his opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, he cited conservative arguments that someone who places a newborn for adoption today is likely to find a good home for the baby because there's so much demand. In a footnote, he cited a CDC report from 2008 describing the domestic supply of infants available for adoption as virtually non-existent. Well, that got the attention of people like Amy Christian. She was adopted and wrote an essay for NBC News saying that adoption is no solution if Roe is struck down. Amy, welcome.
Hi there, Peter. Thanks for having me.
I'm so interested in your perspective because this hits very close to home. You were born days before Roe was decided in 1973. You were then adopted. So help me understand why you've been writing that adoption is not a substitute for abortion.
Well, as you know, Peter, Roe is about privacy. It has nothing to do with pregnancy, birth, parenthood. It's not an alternative. Adoption is not a substitute for abortion because of the repercussions of forced pregnancy, forced birth, and forced surrender of a child. This is something that has huge repercussions on the women who are forced to go through something that they don't want to go through. And for the Supreme Court to turn this into something about creating a supply of infants for people who are experiencing infertility or who want to have children and can't for whatever reason, it's not an answer. It's not an answer.
Well, that makes me think of the oral arguments for the Mississippi abortion case at the Supreme Court when Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who has two adopted kids, said that safe haven laws, which allow a woman to leave her baby at a hospital or a fire station to eventually be adopted, that those take away the pressure of forced motherhood. How does that hit you?
That's exactly what I'm saying, that the trauma of pregnancy and the very trauma of forced birth, it doesn't do away with not having to raise a child. My birth mother, for example, who I met when I was 26 years old, never really moved past this emotionally. She could never forgive her own parents for, as she put it, forcing her to surrender me, forcing her. Even though, as you mentioned, I was born just days before Roe. I was born in New York, where since 1970, abortion was safe and legal. She didn't have the right to make her own choices. She was 16 years old when she was pregnant, and she went to her parents, and she wasn't allowed to make this choice on her own. And she never got over it. And she told me many years later that she wished that she could keep me. And it affected the rest of her life. And it affected me and the rest of my life. And that is incomparable to the trauma, if there is trauma, of abortion.
You've been public about your own unplanned pregnancy and the choice that you made to have an abortion later in life. Did you consider adoption?
Absolutely not. Other people talked to me about it and said that I should give my child the chance that I was given. And that made me think of when I was growing up, people asked me if I wasn't grateful that I wasn't aborted. And that's a rhetorical question. Of course, I'm grateful I wasn't aborted. But if I had been aborted, I couldn't answer that question. What I am grateful for is to be alive and to be able to be an activist for women's rights and to be an adoptee saying that I'm proudly pro-choice.
Amy Christian, stay with us just a few minutes because I do want to bring in journalist Gabrielle Glazer, who has written a book about the history of adoption. It is called American Baby. We've spoken about it on this program. It takes a deep look at what happened in the middle of last century when abortion was illegal, at a time when millions of unmarried women were forced to give birth in shame and in secrecy and then hand their babies over in closed adoption. So Gabrielle Glazer, welcome back to the program. It's good to speak with you again.
Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for having me.
So Amy and many other babies and their birth mothers were a part of what's called the baby scoop era. So when you hear her story and you reflect on that time, like, do you hear echoes of history resurfacing today?
Oh, I absolutely do. The baby scoop, as you just mentioned, was a period during which about 4 million American women, mostly unwed, were forced to surrender the sons and daughters they had conceived. At a time when there was no sex education, very little birth control, and of course, the period before Roe and the decades between the end of World War II and 1973 really can show us a lot about what a post-Roe future might look like.
And so when you hear some Republicans say if there is less abortion, there will be more adoption, what do you say?
I say that the rate of placement during the baby scoop era among unwed women, in other words, women who were sort of forced, like Amy's mother, to relinquish their children into this very lucrative and exploitative adoption system that ran nationwide, they really had no choice. Society dictated that unwed women were bad girls, and today that narrative has shifted quite a bit, but very few of them choose to actually place. I think today we know the difficulties of adoption, the lifelong grief that birth mothers face, the lifelong anxiety and wondering that many adoptees live with the rest of their lives. So this is not just a simple transaction that we can fill in the blanks and say, oh, place your child, put your baby in a safe haven, no questions asked, everything will work out fine. We know better than that today.
I heard you use the word lucrative referring to adoption agencies in the middle of last century, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of people were concerned, or at least their ears perked up when they heard Justice Alito in his draft opinion mention the CDC report and use that phrase, domestic supply of infants. How do you interpret that?
I agree with you. I think many people outside the adoption community were shocked. But to adoptees and birth parents and adoptive parents, I think that there was an understanding, certainly, that that is a reality, and it has been a reality in adoption for at least the last 100 years.
Do you think there's a risk that the adoption industry could turn into that once again?
Yes, I do. I know that the demand for infants in particular is extremely high. I did see a statistic, and I would take this with a grain of salt because it came from a lobbying group in Washington, but it suggests an incredibly lopsided ratio of prospective parents who are seeking to adopt and the number of babies who are surrendered each year. I think I saw a number that said around 20,000, and the number of people seeking to adopt is roughly a million.
On the other hand, so much has changed. Open adoptions are much more common than they used to be. The shame and the stigma, you've mentioned this, it's still there, but it has lessened to a great degree. Do you see a chance that expanded adoptions that might actually be a good thing and that things could be different from the baby scoop era?
Oh, I think there's hope to certainly believe that could be the case. And I know that there are a lot of wonderful integrated open adoptions in which adoptees are very aware of who they come from, who is raising them, what it means to come from a large, expanded, blended family. I think if it's done right, it can be a wonderful thing. But the key message to that is doing it the right way with the adoptee's heart in mind.
Amy Christian, if you're still there, I'd like to bring you back before we close out here and get your thoughts on this. This is Gloria Purvis. She's a conservative. She's against abortion rights. She was on our show recently. And she said that encouraging adoption shouldn't actually be the priority if Roe ends.
No, I don't think anybody should be coerced into giving up their child. I'd much rather have us have services that actually help these mothers keep their children. But in the cases of women who absolutely are sure they cannot keep their child, then I think we should help them as much as possible. I'm not sure it will, that adoptions will increase. I'm not sure.
I wonder what your thoughts are. Do you think that if someone had offered your birth mom more help, more support back in 1973, 1972, that your story would have turned out differently, that hers would?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do, Peter. Most birth parents are young, under-resourced, don't have health insurance. Perhaps they're lacking education. And I absolutely think that if they had different resources and their situations were different than the families and these stories would turn out differently. I think she's 100% right.
Do you have hope that it might actually happen if or when Roe falls, that they would get that support?
No, I don't. Because I don't think that's what the conservative right is looking for. When we saw that phrase, domestic supply of infants, I think the answer was there, unfortunately.
Amy Christian is an adoptee and a writer. We're going to link you to her op-ed at hereandnow.org. Also, Gabrielle Glazer, a journalist and the author of the book American Baby. Thank you both so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.